Species.
Unite.
Species. Unite.
Historically, some of the leading airlines in the world were responsible for transporting these monkeys. So you had national flag carrier airlines such as British Airways, such as American Airlines. All of these big airlines were involved in transporting these monkeys in their hundreds and their thousands every year on commercial passenger airlines. And rightly, the public were very concerned. There was a growing swell of public opinion that was opposed to not just non-human primates being transported by airlines, but also other animals as well. So there has certainly been a big move away from passenger airlines transporting monkeys, which has caused problems for the research industry in being able to obtain the monkeys.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Sarah Kite. Sarah is the co-founder of Action for Primates. They campaign on behalf of non-human primates globally. Sarah's been doing this work since the 80s. And although a lot has changed since then when it comes to animal research, for instance, we no longer test on chimpanzees. A lot hasn't changed. And I think a lot of people aren't even aware of how prevalent animal research is still today. Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you.
So I want to get to Action for Primates, but I want to start way back. You've been on the front lines since the 80s for animal rights. And first of all, I want to know how it started.
I became vegetarian actually at a young age when I was about 12. So I sort of grew up with a great caring for animals and concern for them. And through my teenage years, I think I became aware of various areas in which animals were being exploited. I lived in the country, so I became aware of hunting and farming. And it was then when I went to university in 1981 that I realized that there were groups who were involved in campaigning for animals, and that there were things that I could do proactively, which was wonderful, because having felt fairly alone living in the countryside, being opposed to what I saw going on around me, but not knowing what I could do about it, to suddenly be at university and to meet other like-minded people, I became actively involved in the animal rights movement. And the 1980s was certainly a very active time in the UK.
And that's pretty much when undercover investigations started too, was the 80s, right? And you were involved in all of that.
I went undercover myself at a contract testing laboratory in the UK. So that was in 1988. I was able to take photographs of the suffering of beagles and rats and mice involved in toxicity or poisoning tests. And that received national, well, and international media coverage, because it was fairly unheard of in those days for people to be working undercover.
Were you working at the lab?
Yes, I was. Yes, I worked. And it was Huntingdon Research Centre. I got a job there as a cleaner in the animal toxicological department. I worked with beagles and with rats and mice, and I was able to sneak a camera in. In those days, hidden cameras didn't didn't really exist, or those that did exist were especially large. I had to actually take a camera out and take photographs. So it was risky.
I mean, it was risky anyway, but it was really risky. Yes. And how long were you there at the lab?
Well, I was there over quite a few months. I worked part-time, and it spread over between 1988 and 89. I was there.
That's incredible.
Yes.
And so hard to just keep showing up every day.
Yes.
Right?
It was. I mean, it was incredibly difficult. It was a period of my life that I'll never forget it. I mean, it was just upsetting, and getting to know individual animals and then seeing what was happening to them and returning maybe after a week or two to different rooms, because we would work different shifts in different areas, and then finding a whole room was completely empty, and just knowing that all those animals who I'd seen, you know, the week before had now all been killed. It was seeing the suffering, the attitude from the workers, the way in which the animals were just treated as numbers. So yes, it was a difficult time, but certainly not one that I regret. It made me more determined that, you know, undercover investigative work, how important it was, because so many people just don't or didn't know at the time what was actually happening to animals in laboratories, and many still don't know. So the importance of actually exposing the reality of what's happening to these animals is so important. It sort of set me off on my journey, if you like, in terms of then continuing with undercover and investigative work.
Your career up until now, since you started Action for Primates, did you kind of stay in that world with, you know, lab animals being exploited and tested on?
Well, when I first joined the animal rights movement, I got very involved in several different areas. I joined the BUAV, the British Union for the Abolition of Vivisection. I did focus on the whole use of animals the supply of animals to laboratories, and then the use of animals in laboratories. But one of the areas that I very much focused on was the international trade and transportation and use of non-human primates for the global research industry. So again, back in the 80s, BUAV was involved in a very unique investigation with regards to infiltrating the global trade in wild caught primates for research. And again, we were able to get TV coverage from a documentary, a high profile documentary, and media coverage. So from then on, I very much got involved in the whole global trade and transportation of non-human primates for research.
Will you talk about that a little, and talk about it back then versus now as well? Like, has it changed?
In the 80s and 90s, well, I guess the 70s, 80s and 90s, the global trade was very much a trade in wild caught primates, monkeys who'd been captured in the wild and shipped overseas. So there would be thousands of macaques, baboons, African green monkeys, all, you know, variety of species who were captured in the wild and then literally just sent to dealers in Europe, in the US. And when BUAV did the investigation, we were able to send people overseas. So we sent them to infiltrate the trapping networks in countries like Mauritius, in Indonesia. And we were able to show that certainly for Indonesia, for example, out of every 10 monkeys who were exported from that country, 8 would die before actually reaching the laboratory. And that was just because of the appalling way in which they were caught, the way in which they were transported. They had diseases that would be impacted by the stress and of the capture, the transportation. So it was a fairly shocking trade at that time with regards to wild capture. It then did change. Various countries imposed bans on the import of wild caught monkeys for research purposes. And that's been steadily increasing over the years, but the trade hasn't stopped. Sadly, it's turned into a captive bred trade. So now you have monkeys being bred in captivity to be exported for research. So they're being bred in large scale facilities in countries like, well, Mauritius, Vietnam, Cambodia, China, Laos. So they're still being captured in the wild for breeding purposes, and then they're being bred and their offspring are being exported overseas.
Typically, when they're caught in the wild, they're not, those caught in the wild primates are brought to breeding facilities. They're not brought to
labs. Some are still. I mean, that's the disturbing thing. In the last couple of years, we have seen that the wild caught trade has certainly restarted in certain countries. So that has been a major step backward in terms of animal welfare, you know, at a time when international opinion was very much opposed to the wild capture of monkeys for research. We're now seeing certain countries like Mauritius, like Indonesia, like St. Kitts, that are continuing to allow wild monkeys to be captured. And that doesn't mean to say that, you know, the captive bred trade is any better. I mean, keeping monkeys in captivity all their lives in barren concrete pens, you know, deprived of their freedom and the foliage that surrounds their cages, their natural habitat. I mean, you know, that's a brutal and cruel. And the final destination for all of these animals is going to be the research laboratory. So they all end up meeting a similar fate.
When you say that, like, the international opinion, the bigger opinion of the world was really anti, is really anti the capturing the wild monkeys, are they anti the breeding facilities?
No, I mean, they're anti the capture of monkeys captured in the wild. So you have certain organizations who oppose the wild capture of monkeys for research purposes. You have countries such as the UK, which has banned the import of wild caught monkeys for research and did so in the 1990s on the back of the BUAV investigation. However, they continue to allow the offspring of wild caught monkeys into the country. So there have been these various areas in which there has been progress, but overall the trade in non-human primates continues. The numbers still continue. You've got tens of thousands of monkeys being traded around the world, particularly to Europe and to the US, which is one of the major importers.
In the US, when I tell people about animals in labs, a lot of people are surprised. There is a portion of the public that doesn't really even know that all this testing is still happening. But then there are the people who say, well, we need it. What do you say to them?
Scientifically, you know, from a scientific perspective, actually using other species who react differently to drugs, to chemicals, they react in ways that you can't predict that humans will react in the same way. And obviously, when it comes to things like toxicity testing, where you're actually looking at so-called safety testing to establish whether a particular drug or a chemical, if it's going to be safe in an animal, will that then predict the safety of that drug or chemical in a human? And no, of course it won't, because different species react differently to different chemicals. For example, with non-human primates, particularly in the US, they're used in alcohol and other drug addiction research. So you have macaques being forced to become alcoholics, forced to become addicted to cocaine, in order to try and simulate similar behavior in humans. And you think, but how could it? You know, sticking a monkey in a cage and forcing them to become an alcoholic just is such a mechanistic way of addressing the issue and fails to take into consideration all the other variables that impact on humans, such as genetics, their environment, their behavior, their whole lives.
And a lot of these tests, like this, I mean, they're all pretty stupid, but a lot of these tests, they've been doing the same test over and over again for decades.
Exactly.
Right? And yes. Like just on new monkeys.
I mean, that I think that's a really disturbing point, is that so many of these researchers, you look and you think, but they've been doing exactly the same for years, and they've been getting public funding to do so. And I think, again, with a lot of the research that we've looked at involving non-human primates, what they're doing is they're inducing not the symptoms, you know, they're inducing the signs. So, for example, if they're trying to simulate depression in humans, they'll treat animals in a totally inhumane and cruel way by exposing them to stressful and anxious situations to simulate the behavior that you would see in a human if they were depressed, so huddled in a corner, head down. Well, that doesn't equate to the nature of the depression that the human being would experience from, you know, all that life throws at them. So,
and I would venture to guess that every single animal in every lab in the world is depressed.
Yes, exactly.
It just doesn't make any sense that we're still doing this. And I was thinking about before we spoke, thinking about talking to you, that you have been in this battle since the 80s. And it's got to be so frustrating that the world really isn't waking up. Like, I don't understand why this has to be such a huge hill at this point where, A, we have computers and incredible advances in science.
Exactly. So,
and we know that something like 96% of tests that pass in animals fail on humans. We know this.
I mean, I think there certainly has been a move towards alternatives. It's not as if there aren't researchers and scientists out there who are far more outspoken and working on the issue than, you know, maybe they were in the 80s. So I think there is a growing movement towards the use of alternatives. And there are various organizations that have been set up that there weren't 20, 30 yeah. years ago. So I think, you know, things have changed. We've seen some countries have banned certain categories of research. So as cosmetics testing, for example, the use of chimpanzees. So there has been progress. I wouldn't want to say that, you know, that the situation is totally depressing.
No, I agree. There's definitely been progress, but
it obviously hasn't moved as quickly. And you can see that there are, you know, that the status quo is using animal research.
From your viewpoint, is that mostly because like systems have such a hard time changing?
I think part of it is systems do. I think also that when it comes to alternatives, you often find that the alternative test itself has to be matched against the animal experiment, which wasn't actually accurate to begin with. So there are various issues. It's inertia, it's public funding. You know, if there's a lot of funding involved in animal research, it's just a general bureaucratic way of trying to move things forward. And we know that, you know, there are alternative tests that have been validated, which may not yet be being used in certain countries. So again, it's this whole bureaucratic inertia that we find.
So for the actual global trade, monkeys are being shipped all over the world, right?
Yes.
Will you talk about that a little bit? I'm really curious too about when we spoke before, and you told me that like the big airlines will no longer ship these monkeys. And how did that stop? Like what happened to actually make them stop?
Historically, some of the leading airlines in the world were responsible for transporting these monkeys. So you had national flag carrier airlines such as British Airways, such as American Airlines. All of these big airlines were involved in transporting these monkeys in their hundreds and their thousands every year on commercial passenger airlines. And then a campaign was launched by the BUAV in the early 90s, which was then picked up by other organizations over the years. And gradually, as a result of showing the appalling suffering, because, you know, there were examples, although the trade is very secretive, we were able to obtain information and documentation and visuals, etc., to show examples of monkeys who died en route, of the suffering involved, of what happened to them, you know, at one end from when they were being captured in the wild to their use in the laboratory. And rightly, the public were very concerned. There was a growing swell of public opinion that was opposed to not just non-human primates being transported by airlines, but also other animals as well. So we found over the years that some airlines have even stopped transporting any species of animal for research, which has caused problems for the research industry in being able to obtain the monkeys, particularly in the US. So we've seen a move towards cargo carriers taking on the business and transporting monkeys from, you know, one country to another.
That's huge progress, right? That public outcry and airlines didn't want anything to do with it. It just shows you the power of awareness.
Yes. I mean, exactly. It's the power of awareness. It's the power of the consumer. You know, people should know that they have an incredible opportunity to put pressure and to change practices in these big companies, animal abuse and animal exploitation in particular. And for example, I mean, there was one airline, Air Canada, who did eventually stop transporting non-human primates, but they also stopped transporting beagles. And that was primarily because passengers on one of their flights could hear the beagles crying and screaming down below in the cargo hold. That caused an outcry, I think, which again was a real eye-opener for people, that they had no idea that was what was happening with animals.
Well, and then they're being shipped to go get tested on and ultimately killed.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yes, yeah. So it's not just a transportation. I mean, that's just part of their nightmare journey. It's where they've come from. It's the fact they've been ripped away from their families, from their social groups, from their homes, their native homes, and they're going to end up suffering and dying in a laboratory.
Talk a little bit about these cargo airlines, though. And so they're kind of no name. People don't know them, right? So it's not something people really can protest very easily.
No, it's become a lot more secretive. Airlines, we used to be able to find out which passenger airlines were flying monkeys for research purposes, but there has been quite a clamp down on what information is now being put out into the public domain, even though, you know, a lot of these monkeys are ending up in public institutions. The research carried out on them is publicly funded, but yet the public isn't allowed to know how they're actually transported. Exactly. We've very much relied on intelligence, on tip-offs from concerned people as to what airlines or what cargo companies are involved in transporting monkeys. And in the last few months, we became aware of a couple of airlines, one of which is Safe Air, an airline based in Kenya, who we know is transporting them out of Mauritius. But one of the other cargo carriers, in fact, it's a leisure charter airline. So it's actually more used to taking people on holiday to the Caribbean, but is now involved in actually transporting monkeys. That company is called Wamos Air, and it's based
in Spain. How do you spell it?
Wamos, Wamos Air. Based in Spain. In the last few months, it's shipped several cargoes of monkeys. Some of the shipments have contained up to 720 individuals that have been then shipped to the US. One of the parent companies of Wamos Air is Royal Caribbean Cruises, which of course everybody knows. I mean, they're one of the biggest global cruise companies based in Florida. So they're a parent company of Wamos Air. So they are obviously indirectly involved as well in the transportation of monkeys for research.
I'm sure people just don't know this. I mean,
no,
how do people ever know this,
no,
right?
No. And bearing in mind, you know, that these are wild animals, so they're not used to humans. They're not domesticated. So the whole situation must be extremely terrifying for them. And some of them are young, you know, some may be only a year old. I mean, they're youngsters being shipped overseas.
No, I mean, the whole from start to finish, literally like start to finish, when you really think about it, it seems like a really bad movie. Like this couldn't really be happening. Like taking these guys away from their families, putting them in cages, putting them on planes, putting them on trucks, and then life in a lab to be a test subject until they're killed. At some point, we will look back on this, and this is going to be one of the atrocities of all atrocities that we've done. It's so overwhelmingly horrific. And I think that's probably part of the reason so many people have kind of just honed it out and don't really pay attention to the fact that this is even happening anymore, because it's so insanely just appalling. And so you said you worked with rescued monkeys.
Yes.
Were they rescued from labs?
Some were had been kept as so-called pets by individuals and you know, had become highly disturbed, as monkeys who are privately owned do become. So they'd been sent to the sanctuary, but yes, others had been released by laboratories. So some laboratories do release monkeys, mainly those who have been used in some of the long-term brain research. So ones who've had implants, you know, and electrodes in their heads. And these individuals, you know, again, they're highly disturbed. It's wonderful to be able to offer them some sort of freedom of on their in their everyday lives, to offer them natural foliage, space, the companionship of others. I think that's the most important thing. One of the most important things for monkeys is because in laboratories, invariably, they're stuck in single cages on their own, and they are highly sociable animals. So that in itself is wonderful, just to, for them to have companionship of others of their kind.
It's very few that ever get released, right?
I mean, compared to the tens of thousands who would be killed. And in fact, in toxicity testing, which is one of the main uses of non-human primates, they are all killed at the end because their tissues and their organs need to be examined to look to see what sort of adverse effects the chemicals or drugs have had on their body. Oh, so yes, I mean, there's no way out, you know, they're killed at the end of the experiment.
It's devastating. In the US, we now have breeding facilities here, but we still have to ship them in too.
We know that in 2020, over 26,000 primates were imported into the US for research. And that's in addition to all the primates that are bred in the US.
Wow.
So yes, it is.
So those numbers aren't going down in the US. I mean, they
went down slightly from the 2019 figure, but that was because 2020 was an exceptional year. You know, we had COVID, we had China implementing a ban on the export of its macaques, so which meant that the US had to then start looking for other sources of obtaining.
So is that what the quote unquote monkey shortage was about? Was that mostly China?
It was mainly because China had stopped, and China was the biggest exporter of macaques, long-tailed macaques and rhesus macaques to the US. So when they implemented a ban, which they did in 2020, then suddenly the US didn't have the number of macaques that it would need for research. And that on top of there being an increase in animals being used for COVID testing, obviously, as well.
Tell me a little bit more about Action for Primates and how we get behind you and really just try and get some of the stuff to stop.
We have petitions, we put out action alerts, we work with other organizations around the world, in particular in Southeast Asia, in the US and in Europe, all the time, just increasingly trying to keep non-human primates on the public's radar, as well as on the radar of various governments and authorities, in persuading them to protect their populations of non-human primates and not allowing them to be exploited or abused. One of the areas that is of increasing concern is the whole issue of the primates' native habitat, their homes being destroyed and fragmented by human activities, whether it's by chopping down trees or for agriculture or building infrastructure, roads or mining. We're finding that non-human primates are becoming increasingly impacted by humans. You have people looking to solve the issue by using lethal means, by, you know, trapping the monkeys, by killing them. They consider them to be a nuisance when in fact it's the humans that have invaded their territory, not the other way around. So one of the areas that we're very keen to try and persuade governments and authorities and communities is to look at humane ways of resolving these issues and humane ways of looking at how to control populations, if you like, rather than just using the simple route of, well, let's kill them or let's trap them and export them for research.
I think from this side of the world, one way we can all help is to reduce our impact, reduce or don't eat meat, dairy, and there's a lot less animal agriculture at some point. And a lot of the land that's getting taken from wild animals all over is because of animal agriculture.
That's right. we can all consume less. We can make choices about what we do consume, what products we use, and the impact that that will have on species around the world. It's significant.
Yeah. Sarah, thank you so much for all that you're doing. We are definitely going to get the Want a Sarah petition out there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
To learn more about Sarah, to learn about Action for Primates, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. And if you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. You can do so at speciesunite.com and click Become a Member. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Bethany Jones, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.